We got up to Daf Vav Hamid Aleph, and that's a sugya called Behemas Arjona. But the last sugya that we did, which is the sugya of Rava and the Bnei Mechuza, in which Rava instructs the people that there's a problem with the chametz of the goyim, of the chayalim, the troops were stationed there in Mechuza, and the Jewish people were compelled to prepare food for the goyim. So it was what we call a chiyuv achrayus. Achrayus meaning that this was worth money to them, because in event that this chametz would be lost, they would have to replace it. And that's called Dovra Gorim Lamama. And the Gemara quotes two opinions about Dovra Gorim Lamama, whether it's Kimamim Dami or Lav Kimamim Dami. So in any event, what we have here in the Maskanas HaSugya is that on the one hand, the word Lecha tells me Lekula, that you're allowed to have chametz of a guy in your Rishus. But on the other hand, the Lo Yimatze is going to tell me a Chumra, that you're only allowed to have chametz of a guy in your possession if you have no achrayus. As soon as you take a responsibility, then we get into the whole issue of Dovra Gorim Lamamon, and that's called Pikdonos Shel Nochrim. Okay, now I wanted to share with you a few points on this sugya before we start Behemas Arnona. The first question we want to address is what level of achrayus the halacha recognizes. I think, Don, you called it a bailiff, right? The halacha recognizes different levels of responsibility that a bailiff may take upon himself. And the question here in chametz is at what point in the spectrum or on the pyramid of achrayus, because there are different levels of how responsible a person could be, at what point do you become culpable, liable for having the chametz of a guy in your rishus? And this is a gigantic machlokas rishonim, a main controversy. And the one who analyzes this at great length, he has a whole essay on this, is called Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, if you heard of him, in the Kovetz Shiurim. And first, he quotes the Shita of the Bahag, and this Shita is also quoted in the Rush. And there are many other Rishonim who agree with the Bahag. Their Shita is that any minimum, barest minimum level of achrayus is enough to generate a chiyuv bal yirah bal yimatzeh if you are responsible for someone else's chametz. That barest minimum is the lowest level of a shomer. We have four shomrim, and they go for all the way from the lowest level, which is called a shomer chinam. He's not paid at all for his service. And then it goes all the way up on the top of the totem pole to the fourth level, which is called a shoel, who enjoys full benefit of the object. He's allowed to use it in just about any way that he wants. So we go now with the Shita of the Bahag. As I said before, the Bahag Shita is classic amongst the Rishonim, and these Rishonim maintain that any kind of a shomer who has responsibility, even the barest responsibility, the minimum responsibility, which is called the Shomer Chinam, he's chayef for Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh. Now, Shomer Chinam is only chayef in one situation. What's that? Pshia. Pshia means negligence. Meaning, if let's say, for example, you give me your animal, and I'm a Shomer Chinam, I'm not getting paid for it, I have to lock up the animal in a corral. If I leave the door open to the corral, today we would talk about automobiles, if you didn't lock the automobile, then in the case of an animal, for sure that's pshia, because what's the animal going to do if you don't lock the door? It's just going to walk freely out. So that makes you responsible for the absence of providing the basic level of shmira. However, a shomer chinam, in a case which is a little bit unusual, let's say, for example, he did close the door, but a very high velocity wind that was not anticipated came along. That's called in the language of the Shas, a ruach she'eino mitsuya. Is that familiar to you? Should I write that on the board? A ruach she'eino mitsuya. I'm erasing this with great optimism that I'll find the find the, what should we call it, the black marker here. Let's see if we.
Here it is.
Oh, great. So that's called a ruach she'ena. Oh, I'm sorry. Start again. Yeah, oh, I got it right. A ruach she'ena mitsuya. Now, the word mitsuya, which is the feminine formulation of the word matsui, which means common. So the word ruach mitsuya would mean a common wind. We may have touched on this when we spoke about Ner Chanukah, if you remember that. You know, you can't light your Ner Chanukah in a way that a common wind will just blow it out. Here also, in the case of the Shomer Chinam, he's not allowed to put some sort of a kir geves, you know, some sort of a very thin protection over the animal to contain the animal if he knows that a normal velocity wind will come along and blow down that protection. But what we're talking about now is a ruach she'ena mitsuya. She'ena mitsuya means that it's an unusual. You know, the meteorologist didn't anticipate that kind of a wind. So this high velocity wind would not come under pshia, right? So this would not be a pshia. And therefore, what would be the din of a shomer chinam, which is abbreviated shin ches?
Potter.
Okay? So shomer chinam is potter for a ruach she'ena mitsuya. He's only chayef for pshia, and a ruach she'ena mitsuya doesn't constitute pshia. However, then we jack it up one level, and then we get to a shomer sachar. Okay, a shomer sachar is paid for his services, and that jacks up the level of shmir that we demand of him. And he's going to be chayef even for ruach she'ena mitsuya. Now the Gemara has a whole discussion, for example, you know, let's say he puts money. Let's say the mafkid deposited money in his possession, you know, coins, and it was stolen. So the Gemara says that he's chayav for that, even though he wasn't poshe. It wasn't like he left the door unlocked, but the thieves broke into the house and they stole it. So the Gemara says, what should a shomer sachar do with coins, with money, with cash, such that he gives the ultimate level of shmira? And the Gemara says that ein lo shmira el bekarka, that mos, which means currency, from the perspective of a shomer sachar, has to consider any possibility, any future circumstance. He's got to dig underground, subterranean, and place the money underground. Okay, so that's Perek HaMafkid, which is a whole chapter in Bava Metzia. But in any event, so far, we're presenting the Shita of the Maram Chalva and the Bahag. They hold that you're chayef for chometz, even if your level of responsibility is equal to that of a shomer chino. However, now we go on to the second opinion, and this the Rush quotes in the name of the Ri, so now we're in the Balei HaTosfos, and Rakish u shomer chsachar, only in a case where he's paid for his services to watch and guard the object. In such a case, he'd be chayef for gneva v'aveda. So if the object is stolen or lost, he has to pay for that. Then, and only then, he reached that highest level of a paid shomer. Nechshav, it's considered shekibel achrayus, that he accepted upon himself achrayus, and he's chayef for Bali Yomotze. Then we have the third Shita, which is one Deya in Tosfos, in Bava Metzia, that you're only chayev for Bali Yomotze if you took upon yourself the ultimate level of Achrayus, that's equal to the level of a Shoel, and you're chayev even for Onsim. Now when we say you're chayev for Onsim, that means that there was no way that you could possibly have anticipated that event. You know, it was a once in a million tsunami, wave that came and washed it away. And nevertheless, you took upon yourself absolute achrayis. Now, there's a fundamental difference here between 1, 2, and on one side of the coin, and 3 on the other side of the coin. Now, if you're talking about shomer chinam, shomer sachar, you're talking about some level of pshia. That which is relative to shomer chinam, pshia, is a lower level of pshia. And relative to shomer sachar, who's paid for his services, a higher level of pshia, and he has to give a higher level of shmir. But now we talk about a whole different entity. A whole different conceptual category, achiv onsen. This does not come under the law of pshia. There was no element of pshia whatsoever. He gave the maximum shmira. Could you imagine that he dug underground to hide the money, and all of a sudden an earthquake happened, and the money was exposed? In such a case, according to this sheet, it's a Tosef of Metzia. Because your level of achrayis is absolute, it's all-inclusive, it goes even as far as onsim, then you become the owner of the object. Now let me try to explain what I mean, that you become the owner of the object. A shoel who borrows something and has rights to use the object is considered an owner. Why is he considered an owner? In contrast to all the other shomrim who don't have any permission whatsoever to touch the object. When I say to touch, I mean to use it in any way. In fact, if a shomer moves the object from one place to another for the purpose of benefiting from that, he's called the shalach yad b'pikadon. I'm not going to hold you responsible for that, but he's like a goslin. You know, you're not allowed to use the object. You're a shomer. Because the basic definition of bialus, of ownership in halacha, is the permission to use the object for your own benefits. And that's what a shoel is all about. Shoel, who borrows an object, has ownership rights on the object. So such an extent that it could be possible that a shoel, let's say, for example, a man borrows sheep or another animal that could work for him, a working animal. Okay, there's not that much work that you get from a sheep, but let's say you could milk it or whatever you can. And the sheep now grows shearings, you know, wool. The question is going to be, who owns those shearings? So to that extent, that the shoel has ownership of it. Now, if I want to measure, you know, like we put our finger on the pulse, I want to measure ownership in the case of a shoel, what I'm going to say is the following. I'm going to say that the fundamental definition of ownership is who's allowed to use the object, who's allowed to benefit the object. So once I am mashil, meaning I'm the owner and I give it to you as a shoel, you're the shoel, I've really transferred over to you ownership over the object. The only problem here is, and that's going to be an issue in our sugya of chametz, a shoel requires what's called a kinyan. He requires an act of acquisition. And that gives him ownership rights, so to speak. And then he's, you know, ownership rights are rights and obligations, because he now takes on the achrayis to pay him for onsen, which are circumstances beyond his control. But at the same time, he gets ownership rights as a shoel, and he can use the object in any way he chooses. But that has to be clinched by a kinyan. Now, in our sugya, where we have something called pikdono shel nachrim, so the guy deposited his chametz in my possession, I took achrayis, it doesn't seem to indicate anywhere in the sugya that he made a kinyan on the object. In other words, I invite the guy into my living room and I say, yeah, you want to leave your chametz there, leave it on the table. I'll be responsible for it. But I didn't even touch the object. I never even made a kinyan on the object. And if we go with this sheet of Tosus and Bava Tzia, that in order to be chai for Bali Rabbi Motzah on a Goy's Chometz, I have to have the level of a shoel, that level of responsibility, which is the ultimate level, the extreme level, that requires a kinyan, so we're not sure exactly in our sugya how to fit kinyan in. That's a bit of a problem. In any event, we see three different approaches to how to learn this sugya of Kabbalah Sachrayis. When are you chayav for Bayirah Bayimotzeh on the chometz of a guy? So that's point number one. Now, point number two, which I'm looking for, let me see if I can find it. go ahead, David.
Yeah. To be a shoil means you're allowed to use the object. So the use of chametz is to eat it. So if you're the shoil, are you allowed to eat the Mekri's chametz?
No, I don't think so. I think we're not using the word shoil. I was just giving you what we call in Yiddish a beispiel. You know, it's just giving you a simile to shoel. What we're talking about is a situation in which your level of responsibility is absolute, all-inclusive. There's no mitigating circumstances. You're going to have to pay for the object if it's lost or stolen, or if it falls, you know, into the cracks of an earthquake. Whatever it is, you have to pay for it. I was just using shoel because why is this parallel to a shoel so relevant here? Because it indicates, shoel, that you're the owner of it, because you could use it. In the case of chametz that we're dealing with, you're not going to use the chametz. You're not going to benefit from the chametz in any way, but you've accepted upon yourself the ultimate responsibility. And that's called achrayus of onsen. And that makes you into a partial owner of the chametz, such that now you're going to violate bal yiroh bal yimotzeh for possessing the chametz of a goy. But here we get it. Yeah.
This is yesterday when you brought up the case of soldiers coming home and chametz. And what is the case? Perhaps you're not aware that they left their chametz.
Well, no, the Jews were in charge of preparing the provisions for the chayalim. I thought, Reuven, you could ask me the next question, which I want to address. I finally found it here. And that is, did the Jews really accept upon themselves achrayus? No, it's. Whether you go with the first sheet of the Bahag or the second sheet of the Rosh in the name of Bali Atos or the Bali Atos in Bav Metzia, what's common to all three sheetas is what's called Achrayas, Kabbalas Achrayas. I accepted upon myself responsibility. What happened in the case of the B'nai Mechuza? Remember that the B'nai Mechuza were commanded by the king. This was part of the provisions that they had supplied for the king's troops to provide chametz for them. Did they ever accept Achrayas? So here I want to point out a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam and the Ravid want to know the following. What happens if the guy is going to extract payment from me, if it's lost or stolen, without Kabbalas Achrayas? I'll read to you the language. Lo kibel alav achrayas, ach barur, but it's clear, shahanochri yechayev oso l'shalem. So on the one hand, at the end of the day, it's exactly identical to the case that we discussed before where you accepted responsibility because you're going to have to pay if it's lost. But on the other hand, the reason you're paying in this case is not because you accepted upon yourself any level of responsibility. That's not a classical kabbalas achrayus, but rather because of the governmental restrictions and laws that demand that you replace it in the event that it's lost. So here we have machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. First, we'll start with the Shita of the Rambam. The Rambam is in Perek Dalid Mihilchas Chametz Umatz Halacha Dalid. So this is easy to remember. 4-4. The Rambam. Right? If ever I mention Machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid, you know I'm talking about the Rambam. And there may be cases where the Ravid disagrees with the Ramban, but that's rare. And the Rambam says the following. That since the guy will extract payment from you if this chametz is lost, because he has the power to do so, and we know what the power of goyim is like, and it could be that it's legislated by the government as well. Hareza ki kabbalas achrayus. That itself is considered kabbalas achrayus. Again, even though you didn't accept willingly, voluntarily achrayus, the overall bal yiroh bal yimotzeh. And the Ravid disagrees. The Ravid says, that's not Kabbalas Achrayus. He doesn't violate Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh. He never accepted Achrayus. Oh, so the Rambam, when he wants to prove his position, he's going to quote which Gemara? Again, when the Rambam wants to prove that even despite the fact that you didn't willingly accept Achrayus, you still chayv for Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh, which Gemara is he going to quote? The B'nai Mechuza, right? Because in the case of the B'nai Mechuza, it was only by the Malchus, because of the kingship, that they would have to pay in event that these provisions were not available for the troops. And yet the Gemara says, Rav actually instructs his fellow, how do we call it yesterday, city, we had a word for
citizens,
it. Citizens, right? That they would have to get rid of this chametz, because otherwise they violate Bal Yiroh Bal Yimotzeh. is therefore Rabbi Mochiach Kidvarov Midivei Rav Lebnei Mechuza Sharei Sham Lo Kiblu Achrayis Mirtzonam Elot Tzivui HaMelech Ukach. And nevertheless, since they are chayav to pay, if lost, there is a violation of Bal Yerov Bal Yematzeh. But what's the Ravid going to do with our Gemara when the Ravid says that the only time you chayav for Bal Yerov Bal Yematzeh is if you accept it upon yourself willingly responsibility? So the Ravid comes up with a new principle here to try to justify and reconcile our sugya with his shita. And he says the following. The Rambam went way too far here. The Rambam is saying that even if you have a strong person, that's called a gavra limta in the Aramaic form, he's a tough guy, he's a mafioso, and he's going to force you to pay if you don't produce the chametz. That the Rambam was going too far. The halacha would not recognize that as ownership because this bulvan, you know, this tremendously powerful guy and mafioso is going to have my head if I don't replace the object. That's called onsim. That's already circumstances that are beyond my control. But rather, the sugya of B'nai Mechuza with Rava is a reference to what's called Dinei Malchus. Dinei Malchus means the laws of kingship. And if the law that's legislated by the king is such that you are responsible, meaning as a citizen, you have to provide these provisions for the troops, and that's your responsibility as a citizen. And that is codified by the law, it's legislated by the law. That's called Dinei Malchus. That's an absolute responsibility. I don't need you to come forward and say, well, I recognize the law, and I also agree that I should be responsible and I have to guarantee that the provisions are provided for the soldiers. No. It's not dependent upon your willingly, you know, your voluntary acceptance. It's depending on the law. And in order to prove this point, the Ravid quotes Gemaras that deal with mas. Mas means taxes. And the halacha recognizes taxes as a responsibility to pay taxes. So if we live in a certain country, then there's something called Dini Malchus, and if they legislate certain payments that you have to pay, that's considered halachically valid payments, and that you're really chayav. So if a guy's going to beat me blue, you know, like beat me to a pulp if I don't pay him money, that's gzela. You know, he's a how do you say it? He extorts money. Is this such a word? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an extortionist or whatever the word is, and he's just extorting money from me. The halacha doesn't recognize that just because he's a bully, you know, and he's six foot four, you know, 54-inch biceps, or he has guns, and therefore he's going to force me to pay for his lost chametz. The halacha doesn't recognize that. The Rambam went way too far, says the Rambam. What the halacha does recognize is called Dini Malchus, where it's considered within the purview of the kingship and the controlling body of law to expect certain things from their citizens, payments and taxes, in this case provisions for the soldiers. That's not called gzela. That's not called alimut, meaning out of the fist that he's going to beat me to a pulp. Now, this whole discussion is fascinating to me because it goes way beyond the narrow purviews of chametz u'matzah. This has to do with a more bombastic and universal principle called Dina de Malchus Dina, which means that to what extent is a Jew bound by the law of the land? Is that considered valid halachically? And this comes up in many, many different situations, way beyond the bounds of chametz and matzah. Now, I just want to mention before we move on to Behemas Arnona, there's a more technical issue here in this sugya. I would call it a logistic issue in this sugya. What is Rava telling the people to do with the chametz? You can't maintain possession over the chametz because even though it belongs to the guy, but nevertheless you're responsible for the chametz. So what is Rava telling them? Just orchestrate this for me. So the Mechas Chinuch says Is Rabbi telling them literally to destroy the chametz? The chametz belongs to a guy. And although you don't want to violate Rabbi Matzah, I can respect that, but the Mechaskinuch claims, on the other hand, you're violating Gezel by stealing from the guy. And if this chametz technically belongs to the guy, how can you set it afire? And that's an Isur Torah of Gezel. Again, there's a whole machlokus about Gezel Akum, but the Minchas Chinuch is assuming what's called Gezel Akum is also, meaning the Torah itself asses it, right? It prohibits it. Am I clear in what I said?
Yeah.
Oh, so then there's something called, the Minchas Chinuch wants to suggest an answer, and then immediately, without breathing, he rejects it. Something called Gozel al manas lahoshiv. When I steal something from you with my full intention of returning the object later on or providing its value, says the Minchas Chinuch, gam zeh osu mishum gezel, even if he's al manas lahoshiv. So if, let's say, this belongs to someone and I steal it and I intend to, you know, fully intend to return it, that's also gezel. So in order to answer this question, the Minchas Chinuch says the following. First, I'll read to you his language, and then we'll spend just 5 minutes on this, trying to dissect what he's saying. He says the following, that with regard to the possessions of a Jew, my relationship is twofold. Number one, I'm not allowed to steal that which belongs to a Jew. But then there's another law in the Torah that's called Hashavas Aveda, which means I can't even cause you some loss. And that's a Kal V'chomer. If the Torah says I have to return your lost object, then how much more so does the Torah prohibit me from causing you a loss? And this touches on the very, very famous question of Nezikin. If I steal your object, that's clearly a violation of Gzela. But what if I don't steal it, I just damage it, I destroy it? That's not Gzela. Gzela means I take it into my possession. But here I never took it into my possession. I just caused you a loss. That too is also. But the question is how, why, where's the source for that? It's not in Lo Tigzol. And they claim it's in the parasha of Hashavas HaGzela. Hashem's exil is a Kal V'chomer. If I have to return your lost object so you shouldn't suffer any financial loss, how much more so am I prohibited from actively causing you a loss by damaging you? And he says the following, that with regard to a guy, there is no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Again, Lamaisa, I don't want anyone to walk out of this room with it. We return lost objects to Goy for Eva, for another reason. But again, in pure theory, in the conceptual world of the Torah, there's a lot of philosophy here to this, so don't walk out of here thinking that we hate every guy. But you don't violate any sort of Isur if you don't return a lost object to a guy. Are you with me on this? Again, these are full sugyas all over the place, mostly above Mitzia. In other words, with regard to Hashavas Aveda, the Torah specifies Re'acha v'lo Goy. Again, we return objects to Goyim for other reasons, you know, for political correctness, but not because of the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. Oh. So herein lies the difference between what's called Gozel Almanas Lahashiv and Gzela. On Gzela Mamish, the difference between a guy and a Jew. In the case of a Jew, not only do I violate the prohibition if I steal your object, but even if I'm going to return your object, that also is included because the Isur with regard to other people's property includes Hashavas Aveda, which means I'm not allowed to cause you, even on a temporary basis, some sort of an Aveda. But with regard to a guy, says the Minchas Chinuch, there's only Gezel. And if he was Almanas Lahashiv, then, so again, he's going to destroy this Chametz, and that creates what we call an Aveda. It's not gzela, because again, when he destroys the chametz, you with me when I say destroy the chametz? Yeah. I'm talking about Rava's instruction to the Bnei Mechuza with regard to the chametz of the chayalim. He's telling them to go ahead and destroy it. How can he do that? That's gezel. The answer is that's not gezel. Why isn't it gezel? Because he's not taking it for himself, he's just burning it. Ella what? The guy might take a loss. Okay, that's Hashavas Aveda. That already comes under a different mitzvah. And if, for example, if I were to burn your chametz and you're a Jew, let's say it wasn't Pesach the whole year round, that would be a violation of Hashavas Aveda. That would be Mazikin, which is a different prohibition. I'm not taking your object, I'm burning and destroying your object. So that's not Gzela, but rather comes under Hashavas Aveda. In the case of a guy, if you set his chametz on fire, but you have full intention to pay him back, then that's a situation of Hashavas Aveda, but there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda by a guy. There are other answers to this question, but I just want you to be sensitive to the what I call the engineering part of this Gemara. Meaning, logistically, how do you engineer Rava's command, how you implement his command to destroy the chametz? The chametz belongs to a guy. So it's very nice that you want to avoid Bal Yoro Bal Yimotze, but does that override the Isur Gzela? And if you assume that Gezel Akav is awesome in our Torah, how could we instruct the Jewish people to destroy the chametz of a guy? Yeah.
I just want to be clear. In our sugya, it's not the chametz of a Jew who providing it to the goy, it's actually the chametz of a goy who's storing it in the house of the
right, Jew. Right. You have to know exactly why that's so. Some of the Rishonim say that the provisions themselves, like the flour and the water or whatever they needed, were provided by the government. And the Jew only had to bake it together. Others say that since the government required you to do this for the sake of the chayalim, then automatically it becomes the ownership of the chayalim. So for this, you have to really learn a lot of Choshe Mishpan. Choshe?
No, not good.
Yeah. All right. In any event, we're ready for Behemas Arnona. Okay? So what is Behemas Arnona? So we're on the Vavam and Aleph, and we're on the fourth line, at the end of that fourth line, Boy me, name me, Rava. The following question was presented to Rava. Behemas Arnona Chayeves Bibachora O Ein Chayeves Bibachora. Okay. Now, at this point, I just want to, by way of introduction, this question that was being addressed to Rava does not seem to have any relationship to our Masechta, to the subject matter of Pesachim. It has to do with what's called the laws of Bechorah.
Maybe it's because of the same inyan of the Malchus. In Rashi it says Amelech. So it's the inyan of Malchus. So once we brought up the inyan of Malchus before with the name of Chuzah, maybe that's where we just stop in there.
But what the Gemara is going to try to extrapolate from Rava's statement about Behemoth Arnon to something called Isas Arnona. That's going to come up in a few lines. And Isas Arnona is chametz. Okay? Isas Arnona means a dough that was fermented, but it has the status of Arnona. So what the Gemara does is, instead of cutting off Rava in the middle, it gives you the whole presentation of Rava, the first part of which is not relevant directly to our sugya, that's called Behemas Arnona, and the second part, which is called Isas Arnona, that's when we get into issues of chametz. Okay, so what does the word Arnona mean? Arnona is basically a tax. Now, there are different kinds of taxes that the kings used to impose upon the citizens. This tax is a 10% tax on behemos. Now, ultimately, the Jew is going to take out of 10 animals that he owns in his corral, he's going to separate one of those 10 and provide it as a payment of this arnona, as a payment of his taxes. But initially, he hasn't yet designated which particular animal he's going to give the ownership rights of the Malchus now spreads out to include all the animals. And basically 90% of the, let's say each animal is worth 10, and he has 10 animals. So the total value on the market would be 100. At this point, 10% of that 100 is owned by the Malchus, by the kingship. Later on, at stage 2, when he designates a particular animal, then he, the Jew, now owns 100% of the other 9 animals, and the Malchus owns 100% of that one animal that was delivered as payment for the Arnona. But we're not up to that stage yet. We're now before the stage in which the Jew designated a particular, right? So now the Goy has ownership, at least on a partnership basis, for 10% of the entire value of the animal. So now the Gemara wants to know the following. We have a halacha in Bechor, and for this we'd have to learn Masechta Bechoros. The Torah says that the firstborn animal has to be brought on the Mizbeach as a Bechor. That's called Bechor. Oh, so now the question is, what about Shutvis of a Goy? What if the Goy has a partnership deal? So for this, we really have to open up Chumash to Bamidbar Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel. I'll read to you the Pasuk. It says, Vikdashti li kol bechor bi Yisrael. And the Gemara tells us in Masechta Bechoros that since the Torah went out of its way to add the word bi Yisrael, it comes to exclude a bechor, an animal that's owned by a guy, and even if the guy only owns shutfus, he only owns as a partnership a certain percentage of the bechor. So for example, let's say a guy and a Jew are partners in Elsie the cow. Now Elsie gives birth, who owns the calf? Both of them own the calf. It's a shutfus. And even if this calf is a firstborn to her mother, nevertheless, because of the shutfus of a guy, therefore, there's no chiyuv of bechor. The whole parsha there in Bamidbar, Perek Gimel, which is called Hikdashti Li Kol Bechor BiYisrael, doesn't apply. So that Hekdesh doesn't have any demands on the partnership of a guy and a Jew in a bechor. And now the Gemara wants to know, does the same halacha of partnership apply in the case of Behemas Arnona? Because since at this point the Jew has not yet designated a specific animal to be paid up for this tax, so at this point the guy, meaning the Melech in this case, has a right to take away 10% of all the animals. In that sense, he has a shutfus in the animal, including the bechor. So Hikdashti called bechor should not apply. What was the other tzad? Why did Gemara think that maybe chayeves bebechora, that despite the partnership of the melech, you would still be chayev in bechora? And the Gemara suggests kol hechi dematzi mesalik lebezuzi. What this means is that the king is not necessarily interested in the animal. You know, if he takes 10% of, 1 out of 10 of every animal, he's going to have, an endless amount of animals in his possession. Who's going to take care of all those animals? Where is he going to store them? How is he going to feed them? So therefore, within the legislated context of this tax, there's something called Matzi Mesalik LeBezuze, which means that the Melech gives the Jew, or anyone, any citizen, 2 options. You either fork over an animal, or you can fork over the value of an animal. So now, what the guy owns is not really the animal per se, according to this side in the Gemara, but rather, his partnership is in the value of the animal. The animal itself is just a representative, it's a physical manifestation of a conceptual value, an abstract value. So it's not the physical object here, the behemoth itself that the guy owns, but rather the guy, and again when I say guy, I mean the melech here in this case, what he owns here is a certain value. It's a certain abstract value. And in that case, he really doesn't have shutfus in the animals. Now, on the one hand, that's good news, because, this is an animal breeder, this Jew, and he would like to keep his animals. But on the other hand, the bad news is that he's going to be chayiv in Bechora. Because what we're saying is that by virtue of the fact that he can pay off the guy the value, the guy therefore is no longer a partner in the animal, so now he becomes chayiv in the mitzvah of Bechor. And that's not a terrible thing. You know, maybe it's a great option, you know, to go, again, depending on where you live in Eretz Yisrael, but to go to the Beis HaMikdash and bring this Bechor as a karbon. So Gemara says the following, that if this reality, as you describe it, is correct, meaning if we grant that in a particular location or a particular malchus, at a moment in time, Matzi Masalik Lebezuse, the guy, the melech, is not interested in taking your animal, he's perfectly satisfied to receive its value, Lokami boil on the chayiv. In such a case, the guy does not have a shutfus, he doesn't have partnership in the animal, and for sure, the mitzvah of Bechor applies because there's no shutfus of a guy. Ki kami boilon, but what our question, and this is the question we're presenting to Rava, is heichon a situation de lo matzi mesalik le bezuze. It means that the guy wants the animal. The malchus says, you know, I'm going to put an X on one of your animals, and I'm going to take one of your animals. I mean, you have the right to choose which animal, but ultimately I want an animal. That has to be presented. Lo matzi mesalik le bezuze. My. So what about in this case? Amalu p'tura. So Rava says in this case, the guy clearly has shutfis in your animal, which is a bechor, and therefore you're potter from bechora. So the Gemara right away asks the following contradiction. V'atanya chayeves. We have a braisa that says that Behemas Arnuna Chayeves. So Rava simply says Hasam. That price is addressing a different scenario, a different mitzvah. The reality in that case was the Matzi Mesalik LeBezuze, that the kingship allowed you those two choices: either pass on an animal as payment of this tax, or pay its value. And since you could pay its value, therefore the guy, the malchus, doesn't really have shutfis in your animals, and therefore yechayev in bechora. That's that brisa. I, says Rava, I was addressing a case where the guy has rights to your animal, and that's exactly what you're going to provide for him. You're not going to be able to pay him off with money, with cash currency, and therefore the guy has shutfis, and therefore you're potter from bechora. Now that's the first version of this dialogue between the students or those who raised the question and Rava. Now we get to the Ika Diamre. According to the second version, there was never a question about Behemoth Arnona that was presented to Rava. Omar Rava, Rava said on his own initiative, Behemoth Arnona Ptura. The Afagav de Motzi Mesalik Le Bezuze. That Rava now took the position, a very extreme position, that although the Jew could pay cash, but until he does so, the guy, the Malchus, owns partnership rights in the animal, and therefore behemas arnona p'tura, even in a case of matzi mesalik lebezuze. So again, according to the second version, as opposed to the first version, Rava maintains a very extreme position, and this was presented by Rava on his own without anyone even asking him the question. Behemas arnona is shutfis of a guy, period. In all cases, and therefore p'turim in abachar, right? Because it's not, as we said before, v'kdashti li kol bachar bi Yisrael. Because now the guy owns shutfis; it's behemas arnona. And you'll ask me, but wait a minute, I'm allowed in that particular scenario to pay him off with cash. It doesn't matter. Right now, you haven't paid him off in cash. So in stage one, the guy is a shutaf. Now, in the laws of shutfim, one partner could buy out the second partner. So the law in that particular area at that particular time was legislated in such a way that you can buy out the shutfis of the malchus, and the malchus is willing to accept that arrangement. But until you exercise that right and you actually pay a cash redemption to redeem the behemah, up until that point, the guy, the malchus, certainly owns partnership in your anim. Now, here's where we move a lot closer to Masechta Psachim. Isas Arnona. What's the status with a dough, meaning you took flour and you added water, right? And it fermented. Now here we have two issues. One issue is going to be relevant to challah, the mitzvah of challah, my chayv and challah, because we're talking now about isas arnona. In other words, they not only taxed the animals, they also taxed the bread products. And the guy now has shutvis, according to Rava's logic, just like in the case of Bemis Arnona, in Isas Arnona, because since you have to pay a certain percentage of your bread products for the tax, it means the government owns a certain percentage of ownership, of partnership in your bread products. So therefore, the question is, am I chayev in challah? In the Parshin Chala, the Torah says, Reishis Ariso Sechem. Ariso Sechem means the dough that you own, you have to take off Chala. Here, in our scenario, you're not the exclusive owner of the dough, because the guy, through Isas Arnona, owns a partnership in your Isa. So, if we were to stop the Gemara right now midway, we would come to the conclusion that the analogy, rather, just like he says in Behemas Arnona, you're Peturim in a Bechor, then in Isas Arnona should likewise be Peturim in Hachala. Says Rava, no, there's a contrast between Behema and Isa, even though my position in Behema is that the shutvis of the guy, and therefore you're parted from Bechora. In the case of an Isa, Isa Sarnona, Chayeves Bechala, the Afal Gavdalo Matzi Mesalikle. And even though the guy has absolute shutvis, when I say absolute shutvis means he's, according to the law, he's not willing, he's not interested in taking any sort of cash redemption. He wants the Isa. Now, what's going on here? Because to the same extent that the Torah says that the Bechor has to be Yisrael, has to belong to the Jew, the Torah also says in the Parashat Challah that the Isa has to belong to whom? To the Jew. That's called Reishis Ariso Sechem. So there seems to be an inconsistency here in Rava. Why would Rava say that on the one hand, Behemoth Arnona, because of the Shutfis of Goy, is Pturim in HaBechor, and in Isas HaArnona, which is also a Shutfis of a Goy, Rava says, Yechayev Bechal. Not only Yechayev and Chala, even if the Goy has absolute rights to take away your Chala, and you can't redeem it with cash. My timer, what's the basis of this distinction between Behemoth and Isa? So the Gemara says, Behema isle kola, Isa lesle kola. We're dealing with the Drabbanon over here. We're no longer dealing with the Doraisa. On the Doraisa level, for sure, you're potter from Chala in the case of Isa Sarnona. It's not a Riso Sechem, the Shutfis of a guy. And there's no difference between, on the Doraisa level, between Isa and Behema. Isa Sarnona and Behema Sarnona are both the same identical shutvis of a guy, and you should be potter not only from Bechora in the case of Behema Sarnona, but also from Chala in the case of Isa Sarnona. But the Rabbanon were worried about something. And what does that mean? The Rabbanon are worried about the case of Isa because less lay kola. Less lay kola means the word kol in Hebrew, or kola in Aramaic, means public knowledge. Let me give you an example of public knowledge. Let's say I buy a piece of property from you. That's called karka. And I was unaware of the fact that that karka is leaned, L-I-E-N, leaned to a chov. That's called a shibud in the language of Chazal. And now, if you... what's the word I'm looking for? Not renege. What's the word on a debt? If you default, oh, that's the word, right? If you default on payment of a loan, then your creditor is going to come and he's going to compensate the property. So I claim, wait a minute, I bought this property with all honesty and all naivete. I had no idea that there was a lien on it. Why do I have to pay up your creditor and suffer this loss? The answer is kol. Kola isle. That any lien on karka is registered, so to speak, in the municipality. Don't take me literally on that. That's not exactly what kol means. But kol means it's well known. So before you buy a piece of property, what should you check out? If there's any mortgage, then he's lien on the loan because it's going to be confiscated, ripped out of you. You won't have any claim of naivete. You know, what did I know? I didn't know that there was a lien on the loan because it has a kol. So the word kol means something that's public knowledge. And if you don't know about it, it's because you were somehow hibernating, but you can get access to that public knowledge. It'd be interesting to know in contemporary society what would constitute a kol, because there's so much accessibility, so much knowledge, that sometimes when I lift my finger, I'm assuming that some computer is taking a picture of me and they know it on the other side of the world. Everything is public knowledge today. Everything is invisible, right? But any event, back in the time of the Gemara, there was things that were well known and things that were not well known. So for example, in the case of an animal, if I don't bring it as a bechor, and my next door neighbor is thinking to himself, wait a minute, this was a firstborn animal, why didn't he bring it to the Beis HaMikdash as a bechor? The answer is, yesh lo kol. Everybody knows that there's a tax that you have to pay on the animal, and the spectator is going to come to the conclusion that the reason why you didn't bring this as a bechor is because of the tax, and the tax makes the, as Rava says, generates shutfis of a god. But in the case of an isa, the Gemara says lesle kola. What does that mean? Isa lesle kola. Right. It's not subject to public knowledge, and therefore, if he doesn't go ahead and take off chala, they're going to accuse him of violating the Isur of Tevel and non-fulfillment of the mitzvah of Chala. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says the following. He says, Isas Arnona. Now, how do I tell you where this Rashi is? It's like smack in the middle of the page almost. You see, I have a Gemara which has Hagos Vitziyunim on the side, but I don't think you have that, so... Anyway, hopefully you'll find a Rashi that starts with the words Isas Arnona Chayevis. So Rashi V'Afal Gavdi Isas Nochri Ptura. Even though the guy has Shutfis, because the Melech is going to take a certain percentage of your of the dough that you're going to use to break breads, and therefore you would assume that since the guy has Shutfis, it's not called Arisos Sechem, and therefore you're not Chayev and Chala. But nevertheless, Ochel Yisrael below Chala, if he would go ahead in the case of an Isas Nachri, where it's, let's say, it's public knowledge that the guy has ownership rights, he has partnership rights, then he doesn't have to be Mafresh Chala Dariso Sechem Ksu. But nevertheless, in the case of Arnona, where the Shutfis of the guy is based on a tax, Zo, this Isa, even though there's Shutfis of a guy, Chayevis. Why? De les la kola. This is not public knowledge. The fact that the guy has rights to take a certain percentage of your dough, right, is not public knowledge. Varoa omen, the spectator who sees him eating his bread without taking off challah, let's say, for example, he's a Kohen, you know, he's very interested in getting his portion of challah, the Oklobolo Chala, he's being accused of eating bread without taking off Chala. That's a very severe violation. That's a Chiv Misa Videi Shamayim. Abel Bebehema Islei Kola V'hod Esnanya Chayeves B'Chala Hu Dutanya. That's why you're going to be a potter from now. And now the post going to go into a whole deal with Shutfis of a guy in Chametz. What happens if we're saying that in the case of a chiyuv chala, would I be mafresh chala, would I not be on a doraisa level? I don't have to be mafresh chala if the shutfis of a guy. So the same thing might apply to chametz. Maybe I don't have to destroy this chametz if there's shutfis for goy.
No, maybe the other way around. I say the other way. If you're already saying that there's a shutfis that applies, that passes you from challah, so that means that I should davka abi chayef to bal yerol loy matzah.
Well, wait a second. If there's no shutfis, then it's totally mine. It belongs to the Jew, right?
Right.
We're trying to say that in Chal you're part because of the shutfis of a God.
What's the shutfis?
So in Chal, if I don't introduce the shutfis of a God, then for sure I violate by your own box. Oh, but now that we've said that Isis are known on a Doraisa level, it's not for the issue of Kola, would be parted from challah, it means that we validate or we recognize the shutfis, the partnership of the guy. Oh, so now the chametz is not totally mine. So does the Torah require me to destroy chametz when the guy owns part of the chametz?
Right.
So that's what we're going to say here. But the truth is that if somebody sees this chametz in your possession, he doesn't know anything about it. So it, you know, at least on a derabbanan level, we're going to have to deal with this issue that you're going to be suspected or accused of maintaining ownership over chametz. Let's just see if we can push it for another 2-3 minutes and at least begin the next sugya. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa, Nachri shenichnas l'chatzero shel Yisrael v'tzeiko biyado. A guy comes into my house on Pesach and he's holding on to chametz. Do I have to destroy it? So the Braisa says, "Ein zokuk levar." I don't have to throw the guy out or destroy his chametz. There's no bayiro bayimotze. But if kido etzlo, if the guy deposits it by the Jew, zokuk levar, then you have to destroy the chametz. Why? Because that's called pigdono shel nochri, and the Yisrael accepted achrayus. And he pointed it to the guy, and he said, he pointed to a place in his house, and he said, "Put it down, and I'll take responsibility." Hence, he violates Bal Yiro by a month. However, Yiched Lo Bayis, if let's say when the guy asks him to protect and guard his chametz, the Jew answers and he says, "You know what? Here's the house. You put it wherever you want. The house is Lefanecha, it's in front of you. Laissez-faire, you know, Kol Dichvin, wherever you want to put the chametz, anywhere in the Bayis, you put it down." Is then ain't zokuk levar. Why? Because what he was telling the guy was, "I'm not accepting responsibility. You want to put your chametz in my house? You find a place which you think is secure. I'm not going to lock it up in a closet under lock and key, and therefore I'm not willing to accept any sort of responsibility." Shenemar lo yimotze. Now it's a little bit confusing here because lo yimotze, if you remember, was a chumrah. But let's go with Rashi Shita, for anybody who recalls that Rashi says we take the Lecha from Lo Yiroh and we place it into this Pasuk Lo Yimotze. So then it says Lo Yimotze Lecha. Lo Yimotze Lecha means that unless you accept Achrayus on this Chametz, you don't have any problem. So in the case of Yiched Lo Bayis, since the Jew presumably does not accept any responsibility for the Chametz, then it doesn't bother us if the Jew allows the guy to find himself a corner in his house and hide away his chametz. Now, at this point in the sugya, the Gemara is going to go into a detailed analysis of these last three words, the closing finale of this brisa called Shenemar Lo Yimotze. Maika Omar, what is he darshan from the word Lo Yimotze? Now, notice that the Bryce is divided into two parts. In the first part, which is called Hifkido Etzlo, is Zakuk Levar. The guy, by depositing his chametz in the house of the Jew, makes the Jew liable to Bal Yerov HaYimotze. And he has to circumvent Bal Yerov HaYimotze and Zakuk Levar. He's got to destroy the chametz. In the Seifa of Yiched Lo Bayis, the Bryce says, "Ain Zakuk Levar, there's no Bal Yerov HaYimotze." Amar Papa Reishakoy, that the drush of Lo Yimotze is going back to the first case. The Hachi Kamar, and this is going to be the case where the Jew accepted Achrayas. Hifkido Etzlo Zokuk Levayer. if the Jew accepts responsibility, he's got to destroy it. Shenemar lo yimatze. And again, now we're using lo yimatze lechumra because the absence of the word lecha to teach you that whenever you accept achrayis responsibility on the chametz, we have three different shitas, if you recall, about what level of achrayis he accepts, then you violate bal yiro by yimatze. Rav Ashi amar li olam haseifa, where the brisa says yichud lo bayis ein zakuk levayir, even then I can justify the drush of lo yimatze. How so? Hachi kamar yichud lo bayis ein zakuk levayir shenemar lo yimatze bibatechem. And the Torah adds the word bibatechem to tell you that it's got to be, to use Rashi's term, matzui biyadcha l'chol cheftzecha. Then when is it asur? That's only bibatechem. You know, it's like in your house. But here in this case where he tells the guy, it's your chametz, you put it down wherever you want, I have no shaykhis, I have no relation to your chametz, that's not called yimatze bibatechem. Why? Did Nachri ki kama ayil beisei denafshe kama ayil? When the guy goes into the house and he puts his chametz down, it's like he's going into his own house. It's not bibatechem. It doesn't have the status of the bias of a Jew. In other words, the bias of a Jew means anything he keeps in his house that he can have access to, that he can enjoy the benefit of, that's called yimatze bibatechem. But if he says to the guy, here's my house, go in and out at free will whenever you get a chance, put your chametz in every corner that you want, that's not called bibatechem. So the upshot or the summary of this Gemara is that Rav Papa and Rav Ashi offer two alternative possibilities as to how to interpret this brisa, and specifically the last three words of the brisa, shenemar lo yimatze, is that drasha going back on the resha when you're chayav, and then the chumra of achrayus, which generates by yiro b'yimatze, is derived from the absence of the word lecha in lo yimatze, or as Rav Ashi would have it, this is going on the sefer where you don't violate because lo yimatze b'batechem means it's got to be dumya b'batechem, meaning that you can use it anywhere in the house and it's accessible to you, enjoy it and benefit from it in every way, shape or form that you choose. But here, where he says yichud lo bayis, and he says to him, here's my house, you know, come in, come out, wherever, whatever you please, that's not considered b'batechem. So we both say, here's where we want to stop today. And we accomplished a great deal today. We're up to Lememra. So if you can help me by making a note of it, because in case I forget, we're up to the word Lememra. And tomorrow, believe it, we're going to have two very interesting sugyas in Chavis. One sugya is, what do you say to a person who has to go out of his house and he won't be back in time for Bedikas Chametz? Is he chayav in Bedikah? Let's say he won't be home at all during Pesach. Do you have to make a Bedikah? Do you not have to make a Bedikah? And the other sugya that we're going to have is, what happens if you find Chametz on Pesach? Now, if it's Chol HaMoed, we're going to allow you to destroy it. But if it's Yontif, what do we allow you to do? And do we say that since he did a Bedikah, but he missed up on one piece of Chametz, and now all of a sudden he finds it on Pesach, so Igloy Milsam Afreya, that he violates Bal Yiro by Yimotze. So we're in a real bind here, because now that he has Chametz, which he owns, and he didn't find during the Bedikah, he's liable for that Chametz. Okay, then, Rabosai, we'll stop here. Let me know if anyone's interested in learning Hilchas Purim in Mishnah Berurah. That's at 10:30. Let's go. I didn't know he was talking and I pressed the button. Now, I would love to offer you guys something to drink, because I don't know about you, but I'm very thirsty. I've been speaking for hours here. But, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that we should recite this psalm, so we're not going to drink anything. I want to thank everyone who participated in this fundraising campaign, because Baruch Hashem, we reached that goal. Today we're doing our mullet, the midst of destroying our mullet. Would you like to get the handout? I gave it yesterday, but you aren't here, so I think I have an extra one for you. See, I have it in this black bag. So give me a minute. It's in the black bag.